do at home and take care of your own environment. For instance, in day one of my 7-day algae makeover, it's all about nutrition. And the 7 foods I ask, I put in my book, which ones to remove and eliminate, those were the 7 top foods that my son really needed to watch out for. But I found that as I started taking care of more and more allergy cases and pediatric cases, those 7 ones kept on coming up, the same 7 foods.
And so you're suggesting that people who want to deal with allergies, even if they don't have digestive symptoms, they may see benefit by working on food allergies.
Correct. I found that the number one way to reduce inflammation in your body, and I mean not only gut, but also inflammation in your respiratory system and any other area that's, and you know, inflammation is one of the key factors of an allergic reaction. Well, by reducing the inflammation in your gut, that's the fastest way to reduce other allergy symptoms. For instance, if you've got, let's say, a runny nose in the morning, itchy eyes, runny nose, and you're all congested, and, you know, some people might have these dust mite allergies. If you reduce the inflammation in your gut, in your digestive system, you're actually going to have less allergic reactions because you're not overburdening your body and you're not overburdening your immunity. So you're less sensitive. Does that make sense?
It does. But I was curious about the 7 foods that you recommend removing. And it would seem to me that different people would have potentially very different food responses and food allergies. So are you recommending? Are you recommending that people remove those 7 foods across the board, or are you recommending that people test them out?
In the beginning, a lot of people don't have access to doctors who knows how to do these testing. A lot of these blood tests as well as a scratch test, they do not show up. The food allergies do not show up. And they say that, I've done all the research on it, about 50 to 60% gives us false negatives as well as false positives. So the easiest way, and I'd say the gold standard when it comes to allergy testing, is what you call an elimination diet. Elimination diet. So what I propose is that you take away the 7 foods for the first week to 2 weeks. If you do it longer, you will definitely see more results.
And what are those foods?
Oh, those foods. Number one, it's gluten. These are the gluten grains, wheat, rye, barley, oats, and then even the ancient grains, kamut, spelt. Other names are called triticale, farro, semolina. These are all in the same grass grain group that have a protein that's gluten-based. Now, there's so much information out there about gluten now, which is awesome. I've been gluten-free for over 20 years because gluten actually caused my gut issues and as well as joint pain. I had severe joint pain in my fingers. As a chiropractor back then, it was concerned because my fingers were so swollen. And once I started removing these gluten foods that we all eat, it's in all forms of flour products, our bread, our soups. They even add wheat to soups. It's a lot of hidden wheat and other forms of grains in our foods, though, in our packaged food items as well, that it can cause an irritation. I am not talking about celiac now. Celiac is truly a autoimmune condition. I'm talking about gluten intolerances, where you don't have the enzyme to digest the gluten. But in these gluten grain foods, there's also sugars that also can react. You know, you can't digest the sugars very well. And when that happens, you also get bloating, gas, a lot of IBS, irritable bowel syndrome cases. So that's another reason why we want to refrain from gluten-based. Number two, it's dairy. And I mean all forms of dairy, from cow's milk, sheep's milk, goat's milk, buffalo milk, and even yak milk. And I would say that all the different products that are made from dairy, including the protein and the sugar, which is lactose. The least offending agent of dairy products is actually butter and ghee. Ghee is the clarified butter where they actually extract all of the proteins and the lactose out of it. So going dairy-free will be really helpful. And there's so many wonderful alternatives now that you can find it all in the health food store, the almond milk, the rice, as well as hemp. Those are all really helpful to replace your foods.
So, Dr. Bennett, one of the other things that was interesting in the nutrition section was your encouragement of people with allergies to emphasize cooked foods over raw foods. Can you talk a little bit about that, too?
Yes, absolutely. Now, I love raw foods. I love raw when you wash it yourself and keep it really clean. And what I mean by that is this. One of the biggest factors that a lot of individuals are allergic to and is actually mold and yeast. It's a natural part of our environment and ecological system. We need them for breaking down everything, breaking down our waste. In fact, we have it in our own gut. But I find that if you're sensitive to dairy, when you're sensitive to mold, it can cause sensitivities and inflammation in the gut, and you are changing your gut flora when you eat it. And what I mean by eating it, let's say you love eating blue cheese dressing or blue cheese crumbled over your organic live green food. Well, that blue cheese is actually made out of mold. That's Penicillium roqueforti. It's an actual mold itself, and you can actually be sensitive to that. That's my number four food that I talk about is refraining from eating fungally contaminated food. Another thing, when you go out at a restaurant and you go out to eat and you have this wonderful big salad of baby greens or arugula, well, often you the restaurant, number one, they don't wash the food as, or they don't wash the veggies as you would like them to. And number two, sometimes there's going to be one or two kind of, wilted, moist, a little mildewy leaves here and there. And when that happens, obviously you're going to eat that, and it will disrupt your gut. What a good symptom, one symptom that you will notice, a telltale sign that you've been exposed to fungus, is after you've eaten these types of salads and foods that might be contaminated with mold, is that you get an itchiness in your throat, a scratchiness in your throat, and sometimes even soreness. And that's an indication that you've been exposed to mold. So then you've got to think about, okay, if I've been exposed, what did I eat? Did I have any salads? Did I eat any dried fruits? Because dried fruit is notorious for having mold on it. Did I have any peanut butter? I eat a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. There's a lot of things that I talk about in the book in day one. And number four food that I ask people to eliminate is foods that are not clean, that may be contaminated with fungi, including wine. Wine is loaded with mold.
In case you just tuned in, we're talking today with Dr. Suzanne Bennett about her book, The 7-Day Allergy Makeover. So at the beginning, Dr. Bennett, you talk about one of the things that was a trouble for your son was a reaction to metal in the cookware that you were using in your kitchen. So what would be the best and worst things to be using in the kitchen in terms of food preparation and storage?
Great, absolutely. You know, little did I know that the way I was feeding my son and what I was cooking my food was actually affecting my son's under a chin. He had this one rash that just wouldn't go away. And it was a big patch, I would say about half of a dollar size under his chin. And it was always inflamed. He was always scratching at it. What I found out was that, you know what, there's a way that I can literally shave off his head, take all the hair on his six-month-old baby, and send it in to check out and see if there were any metals affecting him in a negative way. It was a metal hair analysis test. And what I found were three metals that were really high, nickel, mercury, as well as arsenic. Well, the nickel ended up being that I looked in the online back then and found that there are a lot of things that could cause nickel allergy. And for him at 6 months, I wasn't doing anything but nursing him and starting to feed him his little rice meal, right? Now, the first porridge that you give is rice, little bits of baby food. And I would use a small teaspoon, which was made out of stainless steel. Well, so were my pots and pans. My pots and pans were all stainless steel based, and I think I even had an aluminum one back then. So what I did was I removed that. I got rid of it all, and I replaced it with glass pots and pans, as well as the enamel cookware. The enamel cookware is a little bit more expensive, but it lasts a lot longer. It doesn't break as quickly as glass. But anyway, what I did was I replaced it. And within 5 days, within a week, that rash went away naturally. naturally, Dr. Naaman. And when that happened, I'm thinking, my goodness, if I can help my son little by little, recognizing what was the root cause of it, I know I can help him get rid of his allergies. So that was the beginning of like discovering what are my environment and what we were doing in the home. So what you want to do is you want to replace it with things that are neutral. Another good thing would be an iron pot. If you want to make your eggs, it's got to be really well seasoned. Iron pot. I have a beautiful iron wok that I've been using it for years for making my own bolognese pasta, spaghetti sauce. So you can use that you can also use glass potware. Nowadays, there's even, and I've done some research on this, is ceramic. Have you seen the ceramic where it really is nice when it comes to making eggs because it's a non-stick based?
I don't think so.
No, it is available now. It's called ceramic pots and pans, cookware. Ceramic cookware, it's all over. They call it green pots, green pans, or green ceramic now. And it doesn't have the Teflon type of coating where you can get the PFOA off-gassing, which is a chemical that can irritate our body and cause other types of symptoms. So what you want to do is you can get those for nonstick foods. And then I highly recommend, instead of plastic containers to store your food, now more and more information is coming out there about plastics, not only for environmental reasons, but also that there's chemicals in it that leaches out when you heat it in your microwave and, of course, store it in your refrigerator. I use glass storage containers. And although it does have plastic covers, what I recommend is that you use parchment paper to just put right on top of your food, because parchment paper will not leach anything negative into your food, and it will cover up, even if it's hot, parchment paper will not have any problems, and it'll cover up your food without it touching the plastic top that you lock up the container.
And what's your preference in terms of cutting boards, which would be in an area where things would be particularly exposed to bacteria?
Oh, yes. I actually love wooden. I have a wooden butcher block. I use wooden only because of this. They found the research saying that wood is just as they think that because of the wood, how you cut into it, and bacteria can set in. If you use soap and hot water, you will definitely have less bacteria. I think that it doesn't matter regarding bacteria. For me, it's really about the toxins that can be leached out and from plastic. Because plastic you can also cut up as well, and it ends up getting in minute amount into our food when we chop it up. Regarding wood, one of the other things is that oils can also maintain less of a fungal growth. You know, if you put a bar of butter out, you can leave it out for a month, 2 months. You will not ever find mold growing on it. You know, the blue and the white and the orangey type of fur that grows on things? It will not, because it's just full of fat. Fungus does not grow on fatty material. And if you season that wood really well, which is you've got to season it with oil, then it will grow less fungus on the butcher block or the cutting boards. What do you use?
I use a wooden cutting board too.
As well, yes. And it will last longer, I find. You don't ever want to put it into a washing machine or not washing machine, but dishwasher. You definitely want to use hot water and soap to keep it clean.
So another area that was interesting in your book, Dr. Bennett, was the section on the body. And you talk about a ritual called oil pulling that I'd never heard of before. And I would love for you to share that with our listeners.
Oh, oil pulling is a wonderful way of keeping your oral cavity clean, your mouth. People do not realize that we've got a lot of bacteria in the mouth, and not just bacteria. We have fungal growth. You've heard of thrush. We have even amoebas, which are these protozoan, tiny little microorganisms that live in the crevices underneath our gums. Oil pulling is an ancient Ayurvedic technique. It's from Eastern Indian technique, where you actually put a tablespoon of roasted. So you don't want to have anything of the roasted sesame oil, but unroasted. So it's kind of like a blonde, clear colored oil. And you can use, if you're allergic to sesame, some people are, then you can use safflower oil as well. And what you do is you put a tablespoon in your mouth and you start chewing on it. Now, I do it inside my shower while I'm taking my shower in the morning so that I can do two things at once. So what you do is you put it in your mouth and you only chew it. You swish it through your teeth and you chew it. And what you're doing is you're actually emulsifying the oil in your own mouth by chewing it and mixing it. Try to do it for about 15 minutes, longer if you can, but 15 minutes is the most minimum that I recommend. And then what you're going to notice is that once you do that, you got to spit it out into the toilet because there's also waste. It does is it actually pools the toxins coming from bacteria, from the yeast and fungi, kills bugs. Remember earlier I talked about how fungi cannot live in oil? It will kill it. And it pulls it out in addition to any type of metals that might have been embedded into your gums, any of the toxins that are embedded in your gums. It pulls it out, and you are literally sponging it. You know, it's like a sponge, and it absorbs, and then you spit it into the toilet. I recommend to use a toilet paper so that nothing splashes up, and I just spit the waste into the toilet paper and flush it down the toilet because I consider it as waste. Do not put it into your sink because it may even clog it up. And when you look at the oil that comes out, it will be more opaque, meaning, not opaque, it will actually be more solid looking. I opaque is the wrong word. And the reason is because you've emulsified it, and it would be like a yellowish, thick, kind of buttery color. And that's what you're literally spitting out, a lot of toxins. And I find that if you do this if you can every day, but if you can do it several times a week, your mouth will be very clean and fresh. You don't have the morning odor that a lot of people get because they've got a lot of bacterial overgrowth. The plaquing that you can have and that the doctor, the dentist, recommends you to go and get your teeth cleaned all the time and because you've developed plaque from the bacteria, you will have less plaquing. And some individuals even say that they feel physically better and energizing because there's less toxic load. There's a lot of things and you can find it online. Just look up oil pulling. And, of course, I describe it clearly on how to do it in my book. In day 6, which is all about cleaning up your body.
Well, in our last couple of minutes, Dr. Bennett, let's talk a little bit about water. You really discourage people who are suffering from either digestive or respiratory or skin allergies from drinking tap water. Can you tell us what you recommend instead?
Absolutely. Tap water is loaded with chemicals such as chlorine, fluoride. I know up in Portland you guys have fluoride up there, don't you?
We don't, actually.
Did they pass that law?
We've never had fluoride, I don't believe.
Oh, you know, I've been studying. I get all sorts of emails, and I believe that up in Portland, your city was fighting it. I'm going to go ahead and look it up, and if I do, I'll go ahead and send that info to you.
All right.
But anyway, by drinking the water and taking a shower with that type of water that has a lot of these toxins in it, you can have more allergies because you're increasing the toxic load. When there's more toxic burden, when it comes to chemicals in our water and even in the environment when we smell it and we apply it on our skin, we're going to increase that load in our body, which then, of course, increases more allergies and more inflammation. What I do is I recommend getting a shower filter. Now, there's a shower filter that's available that looks like a little ball, and it's kind of small. It's like anywhere from 4 to 5 inches wide. That one really doesn't work very well because within a few weeks, it'll be loaded with the particulates and toxins in the water. I recommend a bigger one that is about a foot-long carbon filter, and it's available online as well. And what you want to do is you want to purify the water that you are taking showers with. And then you're going to breathe in less and you're going to absorb less through your skin. Now, for oral, meaning like consumption, it's best to drink reverse osmosis water. And the reason why I say that is because reverse osmosis water, when you purify it, it will get rid of the small particulates, the nuclear waste that's in our water right now. And you don't want to be in our water in Los Angeles. We have high levels of arsenic and uranium. Now, high levels, what to me is, the FDA says it's in the normal limits, but to me, I don't think that that's something that our physical body should be accumulating or drinking anyway. I would like purified 100% H2O and purified water with reverse osmosis unit that you can get at your local, one of those Costco's and things like that. You can get it online.
Does it remove the healthy minerals that you'd find in naturally occurring water?
You're absolutely right. It will remove the healthy minerals. But the way I see it is that so much of the world actually drink water, like rainwater. And did you know rainwater is very similar to reverse osmosis? Rainwater is just pure H2O. There's no minerals in it. The minerals come from where it goes through the mountain and then, of course, through the rocks of the rivers. And that's why we get the minerals, because it goes through soil and the rocks. And the minerals can also be loaded with arsenic. That's the reason why we have so much in Los Angeles. Our water comes from the Colorado California Aqueduct, and there's a lot of granite in the Colorado rivers and mountains. And in granite, naturally, there's a lot of arsenic in it. So we get that in our water, and because our municipal water, they do not purify it with the reverse osmosis, it's the reason why we still get some of these minute amount of these toxic metals and the nuclear waste. I truly believe that if it's pure, healthy spring water that's not adulterated, with these toxins, I'd go for that first as well, absolutely. But it's, again, difficult to find these days, especially in the California waters, because we've gotten a lot of contamination from Fukushima. You've got to be careful about that.
So, Dr. Bennett, do you have a website if you've piqued the interest of our listeners today and they want to learn more about the book?
Oh, the book, absolutely. It's available at the 7-Day Algae Makeover. You can go to the 7dayalgaemakeover.com, and it'll give you information where you can get the book. And if you do order it online through the 7-Day Algae Makeover, you get 4 free gifts from me, one that you can start right away to start reducing your allergies and start feeling better again.
Well, thanks for being on Health Watch today.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate this. I'm when my desire is to help everyone feel better and get rid of their allergies and get more energy, and so they can do what their life is all about. Thanks so much. I really appreciate letting me serve your audience, Dr. Naaman.
Take care. So
thank you. Bye bye.
We were talking today with Dr. Suzanne Bennett about her book, The 7-Day Allergy Makeover. I'm Dr. David Naaman, your host, and next up is the Health and Healthcare Forum.
To co-sponsor The Triangle production Next Fall. Next Fall opens March 13th and runs through April 6th at The Sanctuary, 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. Triangle Productions is partnering with Basic Rights Oregon in a talkback presentation after the show, which is set in present-day New York and contains flashbacks through a couple's relationship, how it began, and how it might end. Again, that's Next Fall by Triangle Productions, running through April 6th at The Sanctuary. More information can be found on the right-hand side of KBOO.fm under Community Events.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 11:30, and up next is Health and Healthcare Forum with host Roberta Hall. Today's guests are Oregon State Representative Mitch Greenlick, chair of the House Healthcare Committee, and Representative Jim Thompson, the vice chair. They'll be talking about basic health, an optional provision of the Federal Affordable Care Act currently under consideration by the Oregon State Legislature.
Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. The Oregon Legislature's short session included a few health-related bills that I discussed with House Healthcare Committee Chair Mitch Greenlick and Vice Chair Jim Thompson on February 18. The session was scheduled to end no later than March 9, which was yesterday. This program was finalized last week, so it won't include the final outcomes, but even after a few weeks, the directions became clear. We'll go first to a conversation with Mitch Greenlick, then to Jim Thompson, and then back to Representative Greenlick. Our main topic is a study bill, House Bill 4109, concerning what is termed basic health. We'll briefly mention House Bill 4122, that would improve oversight on expensive IT contracts such as Cover Oregon, and Senate Bill 1548 that extends the term healthcare providers to nurse practitioners and physician assistants in many Oregon laws. This bill passed, and it increases the number of primary providers. These are needed because medical care is being extended to more and more people. Work sessions and committee votes so far suggest that basic health and the oversight bills also will pass, but until the final gavel falls, these are simply predictions. It wouldn't be politics if upsets never occurred. We begin in Representative Greenlick's office at the Capitol. How long have you been a representative at the Capitol?
I'm in my sixth term now.
I know that health is something you've always worked on. Could you tell us just a little bit about what your job was at OHSU?
First of all, for 32 years, I was vice president of research for Kaiser Foundation Hospital.
Didn't know that.
And ran the Center for Health Research, a very large research center. I retired from Kaiser in 95 and then spent 10 years as chair of the Department of Preventive Medicine at the medical school. Did that between 90 and 2000. So I'm now a professor emeritus, and I don't do very much at OHSU. I mostly try and mentor some of the young faculty.
So the research part is very close to your heart.
Yes, I'm a health services researcher in recovery.
And your recovery means you're working it out at the legislature.
That's right. Well, I used to say that I would send great health policy ideas down to Salem, and the legislature would screw them up. So I decided I wanted to come to Salem and screw them up myself.
Or put a little roadblock in the way of somebody else.
Or something, that's right.
Have you always been on the healthcare committee?
Since my second term. Joined in my first term sort of ex officio.
And you're the chair.
I'm the chair now, yes.
And you have a very hard-working committee.
I have a great committee. They're terrific.
We're talking about the bill for basic health care. That particular bill has had pretty strong support from your committee.
The committee moved it out to Ways and Means Committee. I'm not sure that meant every one of them supported the notion of a basic health plan, but I think we had strong support for studying it to see what effect it might have.
And that's what this bill will do, is study it.
That's right. This bill asks the Oregon Health Authority to study this as an option for moving forward with studying whether we should ask the federal government for the authority to become a basic health plan state.
Each state can do it a little differently if they indeed choose to do it at all.
Well, I think that's true, but there are some basic underlying concepts that are part of it. It would be specifically for people under 200% of the poverty line, and it would be funded by the subsidies those people might get under the exchange.
Oh, I see.
Well, there are two different populations that would be covered by the basic health plan. The first are people who are legal residents of the state but haven't been in the state for 5 years. They're not eligible for the Oregon Health Plan under federal rules. Then there's the population of people between 138 and 200% who, you know, are relatively low-income people and basically can't afford to buy in the private options in the exchange.
So the people who are legal immigrants, have a green card, as we say, are not allowed to get health care under the ACA at this time.
Well, under Medicaid. They can't get into the exchange, get into the health plan, because they would qualify for Medicaid for the Oregon health plan. I mean, so this leaves this population in that catch-22. They have under 138% of the poverty line, but they're not eligible for the Oregon health plan because of their immigration status.
Some years ago, I immigrated to Canada. I qualified for the Canadian health plan. I think it was 6 months residence, and my employer paid for the coverage up to that point.
I was in England 3 months on a sabbatical many years ago in the 70s, and we qualified for the National Health Service as soon as we showed up.
So every country does it differently.
Mm-hmm. Certainly do.
This happens to be what's in the ACA, and so the basic health plan concept was to work around some of these deficiencies. What other health bills are of particular interest to you in this short session?
I have a bill that will bring Oregon's statutes in line with federal law on electronic prescribing of prescriptions, particularly Schedule II substances. When we first passed the Oregon statutes on electronic prescribing, we left out one category, and that bill would put that category back. I also have a bill that would put quality control processes into any large IT contracts that the state lets. We learned from Cover Oregon that we needed more safeguards in these large IT projects, which frequently fall behind schedule or screw up entirely. And I think that's an important piece.
So that is general, and it wouldn't just be Cover Oregon.
No.
Probably are many others that have had problems in the recent past.
Oh, they sure have been.
And IT is a very difficult field. So those two...
Those are the